Welcome to Baseball Talk, ladies and gentlemen. It's the last week of August, and we have another great show lined up for you. We're going to have an interview for you in a few moments, and later on, we're going to grade Charlie Montoyo's first season with the Jays. We're going to talk about which teams are poised to be most improved next year, and we have another Clark Guides where we look at Tony Batista's crazy batting stance. But first of all, I should introduce myself. I'm Andy Clark. This is Steve Fitzsimmons. We have Rob Whiteman in the red hat down there. And before we race on any further, we should mention Adam Oliveira's behind the switches, making it all work great for us. And that brings us around to our guest for today. We have a local guy, originally from Durham, Ontario, Brad Schaefer, who runs kind of a really cool business, Schaefer Glove Relacing. So thanks for joining us here, Brad.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So a Durham guy, but you're located in Kitchener now?
I am in Kitchener now. The big metropolis.
Nice. And before we get too much further here, so Schaefer Glove Relacing, it's kind of a cool sideline business here where basically you refurbish and relace gloves there and make them look a lot better. So where did you get the idea for this?
Basically I've been the guy on the team with all the tools, and I get asked quite frequently to fix my pocket, or I broke my string and I have a little bit of lace in my ball bag. And I just had the idea one day that I might as well start doing it for a small business. And while I'm watching baseball at home, that's what I do. So I watch baseball and I relace and condition old and new baseball gloves.
All right. So how did you become the guy that had the tools in the bag to do the job?
I guess it would be because I actually love baseball gloves. And as a kid, my left hand had a baseball glove on it all the time. And my family will attest to that for sure. So it's just a love of baseball. And after I did it a few times, and people would come to my door to pick their glove up, and the look on their face after they give me something that looks like this and I give them a brand new baseball glove is more than the money that I make, which isn't thousands of dollars, but the look on people's faces where they see their glove at the end is pretty priceless.
I know what you're saying, because just on the way into the show, I had a bag of old baseball gloves, and here's like an old trapper I had from a first baseman's glove from when I was a kid. And just the nostalgia, right? The how many thousands of afternoons spent playing with buddies. And I guess in a sense, by refurbishing it, right, you're bringing a part of childhood into adulthood with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, people have a strong preference for a glove that they've spent so much time and effort to work in. I mean, a new glove, it takes a year kind of thing to get it to where you want. And so this is a really nice sideline where you can restore it to its former glory, if you will.
For sure.
And people, are really happy with that glove already, and they get to keep it on for a number of years.
Yes, a lot of the times people hold it like they're, here's my baby, they say. Yeah. Take good care of my baby. So I do my best to do that and keep them happy.
Do you have a number of baseball gloves yourselves? Like, do you have a collection?
I do. My wife thinks I'm crazy. I have catcher's mitts. I have trappers. I like buying and finding old, like vintage baseball gloves where I can, I just have them lined up along my mantle kind of thing, where if I find an old glove, I think just what has it been through in its life, how many balls is it, who wore it, I really like that kind of vintage era. And people who want their brand new gloves done too, I've had people give me they buy it and they say, I don't want black lace in this. I'd rather have a different color or their team color, stuff like that. So it's been really very busy, to say that.
What would be the biggest thing that people ask you to do with their gloves? I mean, obviously, putting new laces in particular, but do you get a lot of requests for specific colors or something specific that they want done?
I think for the most part, people go with their team. If they have a team color that they've been with for a while, some people want it exactly the way the glove came, where it would be like an Indian tan leather or a black, and just go with the basic. I've had my daughter, I did her glove, and she wanted every different color that I could put in. So it's like a plethora, a rainbow of colors. So that's pretty cool too. A lot of different ideas that people have, for sure.
And I should mention for our podcast listeners, right now we're scrolling on our screen here a bunch of before and after pictures of work that he's done, where the gloves come to him and then how they look after he's refurbished them. So if you do want to, you know, see those pictures, you can check it out on, you have a Facebook page.
Yep. Schaefer Glove Relacing.
Schaefer Glove Relacing. And you have a Instagram?
It's the same on Instagram. Yeah.
Same on Instagram. You can see the pictures we're using right here.
They're just absolutely amazing. I mean, you look at this glove here. I mean, it's just, it's literally night and day to see it restored to its former glory. It's just, I mean, you must take a ton of pride in being able to do this kind of work. It must really feel good.
It does. Looking at those pictures, and a lot of people follow me that aren't going to get a ball glove done, but they really like seeing my before and after pictures, where it's, like you say, it is very crazy how much better the glove looks, you know, and it's still in the same shape as it was before, where it's kind of probably a bit tighter, but once you play a few games of catch again, it really loosens it up. So,
right. And you apply to solution to the leather as well.
Yeah, I use it's a leather conditioner. And I don't think the one I use now is a Nakona, which is a higher end baseball glove.
Okay.
So I use the conditioner and takes a bit of elbow grease. Some gloves are, I can probably show you the gloves that took me the longest to clean. Yeah, it really brings out the leather and makes it a little bit more not as dry, because a lot of them are dried out. And even though when I take the laces out, I've found a bunch of stuff. You can tell the gamers because they're full of gravel, and I found a toonie in one guy's glove. I don't know how.
Gotta keep that it for after the game, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's for sure.
So again, how did you learn all that? So you're all self-taught? Is there websites you checked out, or how do you learn how to do this?
The first time I bought the actual glove kit that has like a little diagram that says, shows you so many where to put the laces in or how it's supposed to be done. And it's like, it's trial by error for sure. And I've done almost 100 probably gloves, and I'll still start taking these gloves, the laces out, and follow it with the new lace, because I don't want to. But saying that, the more I do it, the faster I get. And it's almost, I can take all the laces out, put the different parts, put them all back together. So it's self-taught for sure, and a lot of trial and error. I have cut a lot of new laces at the start.
So, yeah. So you have a sample of quite a few laces here. So
yeah.
I never even thought there's that many colors for baseball.
No, I was shocked to see them too.
I don't even, and I'll give a shout out to my guy, Matt at Flatbill. That's who I get all these from. He's from Texas. So it's all American steer and cow hide. And like you see, I've got some two-tone, which would give a bit of a different look, where you have this color on the side and the black. Yeah, it's, I might have half the lace here the colors that I did. So I've been anything from metallic gold just to standard Indian tan or a camel.
So you probably have a bunch in stock, but then you can probably custom order a lot of stuff if you need to.
I can get the lace from Texas in about 3 weeks at most. So if, you know, we had a little bit of time and you wanted to order something, it's the sky's the limit for colors anyways. And I can't get it from him, I will find it. So
this is definitely a unique skill set. I'm assuming that you get customers from all over North America that would most likely contact you and send you stuff. Is that the case?
I have had a couple of guys from the States, a couple of guys who wanted to send up, and then they found out how much it was going to cost to get it across the border. So that's kind of a bit of an issue. Yeah. The furthest one away I had, I did a couple of gloves for a guy out in Alberta. So that was a little bit squeamish at the start, like I'm going to ship your glove and you're shipping it to me, but everything's been great. Yeah, he was very happy with what I did too. So,
and obviously tons of word of mouth is kind of how this spreads. And obviously your social media is probably helping too.
That's the biggest thing, I think, the social media part. And the slow pitch community that I'm involved in Kitchener, Waterloo area, is very tight knit, I would say. And it doesn't take long for people to know what I've been doing. And I've everywhere I go, I've got a glove for you. I've got a glove for you. So it's a lot to keep track of, but I'm happy I'm as busy as I am, for sure.
Now, you were talking off camera before we went on about the fact that you watch baseball and do the baseball gloves while you're watching baseball. There's some synergy to that, I think.
For sure. I live a big baseball life. I have for quite a number of years. And now my kids are involved. If you want to find me, I'm at a baseball diamond. And if I'm not at a baseball diamond, I'm usually watching baseball. So in the summertime.
So you're still playing softball yourself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I play a couple times a week. And I play probably every other weekend. So.
And am I mistaken, or were you part of some provincial champions a few years back there?
Yeah, some local guys. It was a couple of masters teams that we had from a few guys from around here. And I was a.
Yeah, throw out some names. So it was good to. hopefully they'll tune in. Put you on the spot.
Yeah, put me on the spot. I mean, yeah, you know, think of anyone. Steve Hutchison was running the team, and Paul Good, and those bunch of guys there. Pat, I can't remember his name. Sorry, Pat. Fat Pat from Walkerton. Hey, he's a beauty guy too. Yeah, those guys were great, and I think this year I came second again in provincials. I think it might have been my eighth time placing second, so it's been a bridesmaid a lot.
Yeah. Nice. And actually, since we're talking about teams, that's probably a good segue there for I'll bushwhack you with this one. You're talking about old teams. Before, you were always around a baseball diamond. Occasionally you played a few other sports, so that's where Adam's cue there for this bunch of beauties.
Oh boy.
Had that hanging on the wall. So
Yeah, so, look at those young guys.
Yeah, number 92 there, second row, right beside Alex Charles, who, safe bet, he and Rod were the greatest football players ever to come from Holstein, Ontario.
I guaranteed for sure.
Yeah.
And Alex was a great football player. I wish I would have known, I wish I knew now about football. What you know what I mean? Like, I wish I knew then, I'm sorry.
What
I know now about football, because I had no clue.
Alex is the gentleman right in the very middle there, and his brother, Rod's behind him. Alex was, he was captain of the University of British Columbia Thunderbirds when they won the 1998 Vanier Cup. So, that was a big moment for a kid from Holstein. And he lived in Mildmay and was a big fixture around Hanover, both he and Rod, for a long time. Yeah. And there's, I was trying to get just you in there, but I couldn't do it because you were right behind me, eh? So.
That number 23, I think he hurt his knee that year. And if he didn't, we were going to be a good team for sure.
Yeah, Justin Hewlett was a running back that showed up out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Showed up on the first day of school. And
I think his mom had she was running a horse barn or something. She had a work visa.
Outside of town, he was a heck of a football player for sure. Yeah, so there you go. Before, nice. So now maybe you can do a sideline relacing old footballs or something. It'd be a lot easier. Yeah,
conditioning the leather.
Speaking of which, I was going to say, because you have some family connections in hockey there. Your Uncle Mike, we've had on the show.
Yeah.
Hockey Talk, our sister show, Hockey Talk, is head coach at Cornell. And your Uncle Jerry played a bit of college hockey in Northern Michigan.
Yep.
And your cousins with Jeff O'Neill, the O Dog. Was there any goaltender trappers or anything? Is there any market for that, do you think?
I have had a couple of calls.
Oh, have you?
The only thing about you putting leather into the trappers, it is heavy. It's a lot of nylon twine, I think. I think it's on my website. I'll do hockey trappers, even those lacrosse sticks.
Oh, yeah.
The leather in those.
Hadn't even thought of that, yeah. Because that would actually, you think about goalies, trappers, right? If you match up the colors for their team jerseys, that would look really sharp.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm totally into that for sure.
Tell us about the cost of what it costs to have something. And we talked sort of off air before, and I was surprised how little actually it is for doing what you do. Tell us about that.
A standard glove, which would this would be obviously it's a trapper. I would charge $70 for the trapper. I would include cleaning, conditioning the leather, and a full relace. Catcher's mitts, they're a bit more finicky. I'd usually charge $80 for a catcher's mitt and $65 for a normal standard glove. Which,
and about how long does it take you to do a project?
I do have another job, and I have two children, so it's kind of intermittent, where I don't have, if I had 3 hours to sit down, I think I could probably clean and condition one glove and get it all done within
about 3 hours.
A few hours, yes.
Yeah, you're saying before the show, your wife was saying you need to charge more, so yeah.
she thinks my time's more valuable than what I'm putting into it, but par for the course for anyone's wife.
It's kind of a labor of love. I mean, it's obvious you have a passion for it. I'm assuming you have aspirations to possibly do some Major League Baseball players' gloves someday.
Man, that would be a treat. I would love to do something like that. Maybe this is the platform that someone sees my work and would appreciate what I do. I'm not sure what those guys have. If they must have someone in their clubhouse that does repairs or whatever, but I'm all for it. I'll do anyone.
Right? Yeah, or pro collegiate players, whatever. Get that resume built in there.
I think I have a lot of followers from the collegiate level in the States on my Instagram for sure. Not much more on my Facebook, but a lot of American kids are following me on Instagram. So it's pretty neat.
So I got this pencil sharpener looking kind of device here you brought in. What's that?
This is a leather skiver. So what you do is you feed the lace. Here, I'll do one. I'll do this red one. I'm doing this trapper in red.
Sure.
So we feed her through here. We'll go this way.
So has it got like a fancy name, like burgundy red, or, you know?
This is just my standard red color.
It's not like
bright red.
I thought it was going to give me something like Sicilian sunset or something like that.
We'll call it Cornelian.
You could charge
leather.
More if you did have
yeah, Cornell red. Right, there you go. Yeah.
So it's just basically skivering or taking the lace down for more of inside the pocket, where it's more of a thinner leather, and then the thicker stuff can go on the outside.
Oh, okay.
So it's I just take one down and that's it.
You're good to go.
So it's you can see on the end where it's taken about half the lace down. So it's more easy to work with in the middle as far as doing your pocket. So there's your leather skiver.
Yeah. So, and where does one find a skiver?
I bought this one from Matt at Flatbill Baseball. Okay. From Texas. Cost me a bit of money, but it really, rather than buying different sizes of leather, I basically buy one size of leather, and if I need to cut it down, I'll cut it down to a more pliable size. So
yeah, it gives you the flexibility to do so. Yeah,
some of them, like some gloves, will have to, you have to bend it over fairly. This one isn't as bad. Like you can see there's not a lot of close knit. Some of them come in and out of the same, so it's like all one piece, so it's not this one is not as bad as what I usually go through. So
I gotta say, what an interesting business, and you do phenomenal work. It's amazing to see the photos before and after.
Thank you very much, appreciate that for sure.
Yeah, so if anyone has an interest in getting their glove freshened up, relaced or refurbished or cleaned, or as they said, getting into lacrosse sticks and some goalie equipment, so you can check it out at Schaefer Glove Relacing, and that's on Instagram and Facebook. So thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back. We're going to great Charlie Montoya and have a whole bunch of other great topics for you. We'll be right back on Baseball Talk. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Baseball Talk. We just had a great chat with Brad Schaefer of Schaefer Glove Relacing. And we're going to bring it around to our Twitter poll from last week, sharing our results. And it was a simple question. We were talking about our predictions for who was going to be the Major League Home Run King this season. And our results here for coming in from our Twitter poll, apparently there was no love for Pete Alonso, who
now has the career mark for most home runs by any New York Met in the history of the franchise.
Yeah, as a rookie, too.
As a rookie.
That. So, 0% of you think the rookie's going to get it done this year. Currently, he has 42 home runs, so he's right there in the thick of it. He's only one behind the major league leader right now. L.A. Dodgers, Cody Bellinger, 17% of you thought he's going to win it, and he's at 42 home runs as we speak on the day of the taping of the show right now. Half of you thought Mike Trout's going to come out on top, and he currently is on top at 43. And 33% of you picked Christian Yelich, who's at 41. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the home run race plays out. And we already have another Twitter question up there you can jump on and vote for. And we said, what stat tells the most about a batter effectiveness? And I know there's quite a few you can choose from. We have up there the choices we have are batting average, number of hits, slugging percentage, and on-base percentage. But if you're someone who's all about the OPS or whatever, you can just reply and throw that into your answer. Because I know there's a lot of stat heads out there, so yeah. this is a Twitter poll for the stat heads. All right, so moving on to our next step here, Jamie Bennett is off. He's got some new great employment opportunities, so he's off dealing with his new job. So congratulations, Jamie.
Absolutely.
But he knows his baseball and he knows his Blue Jays. And he was nice enough to leave with us his projected Blue Jays lineup for 2024. And then we're going to share our insights.
So the question is, are they champions in 2024? You know,
absolutely.
Did he share that with you, or his thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, we're gonna have to have him follow
up on
that.
I'm just curious. Okay, so he knows who he has on that team, but how good is that team? Is what I want to know.
Absolutely.
Too.
He did tell us he's gonna be back. If good. Not in studio, he's gonna do some segments for
Excellent.
Us. So we'll definitely we're gonna have to ask him that one. Yeah. So I think we're gonna start off with Jamie Bennett's position players, and we'll get the graphic up on the screen, and then we'll just sort of see what we think there. For our podcast followers, catcher, Reese McGuire, first base, Vladdy. Not a big shocker there,
no.
Just changed position. Kevin Biggio, second, Bo Bichette, shortstop. I hope that is not surprising anyone. Jordan Groshans, third base.
So right now, Jordan Groshans is the number three rated prospect in the Blue Jays organization behind, well, Bo Bichette was number one. Kind of take him out. Nate Pearson, their pitcher, number two. So he's highly thought of, for sure.
Highly thought of, yeah. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left field. Forrest Wall making an appearance center field there. He came over. Which transaction did he come over in last year? I'll get back to you on that one. Right field, Randall Grichuk. So he sees Randall sticking around. We said last week when we broke down the stats, actually Randall probably has the best case for being the Blue Jays MVP in this kind of sad season.
Yep.
And DH, Rowdy Tellez. So he sees a role for Rowdy on the team 5 years from now. That's kind of interesting. Rob, what's your thoughts on all this?
I've got, for outfielders, Griffin Conine, son of former major leaguer Jeff Conine, who has recently served an 80-game suspension for PEDs. But since we're sticking with the sons of major leaguers, why not? I he's in the system, and I thought, by then he should be up. I don't see Rowdy Tellez sticking around. I don't see him a role for him 5 years down the road. I started to fantasize a little bit. I'm picking Vladdy as your first base DH, along with Josh Naylor, who right now is with the San Diego Padres. as a first base DH, switching back and forth, just because he's a Toronto boy and I'd love to see him come back. By that point, you don't know what's going to happen with the CBA. That free agency may come around at a younger age. Now, we also have that new trend where they're buying out years of free agency at younger ages and giving them long-term contracts, which is what I'm hoping happens with some of these guys like Vladdy and Bo Bichette.
So I'm of that age where I can remember Garth Orge, Rance Mullinix being a platoon at third base.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember when's the last time the Blue Jays have had a real regular platoon at first base.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. But
Before Olerud, probably, yeah.
Yeah. But that's kind of what I'm going with. Other than that, I got a soft spot for Anthony Alford. I really want to see him make the team and have a solid career. So I picked him as well. Other than that, we're pretty much on the same page, Jamie and I, when it comes to the position players. I see Reese McGuire as the catcher of the future. I think Danny Jensen would be a good backup, but he just doesn't have the offense. I think McGuire is just going to step ahead of him at some point, probably next year.
Do you have any thoughts on all this? Is Luke Maley, is he moving into the bullpen?
He's their best reliever this year so far, so maybe. Is there a scenario, guys? I've seen a nice sample size this year of the power and suddenly control of Teoscar Hernandez. I mean, is there a scenario where Teoscar Hernandez could still be on this team in 5 years?
Maybe as a fourth outfielder, possibly. I just don't see him sticking around as a DH type. He just doesn't seem to have the consistency. That's where the way I see it.
He's just his bat control lately has been so much better.
He's gotten a lot better since he went
defensively,
down.
Defensively, he's looked good.
Yeah, he's changed his stance a bit.
There's something there with that guy that, if they can just harness him, could he be,
He hasn't captured the imagination of Jays fans, but I think right now he only has about two errors for a guy that's being blasted for his defense. And if you look, again, it's been a very off season for the Blue Jays, but when we were trying to look at the stats to decide on MVPs, he actually is amongst their leaders in most important categories as a batter. His fielding has been good. And this is a guy that spent how many weeks in the minors this season?
Right.
And he's amongst their team leaders in most categories and kind of quietly did it. And I think he maybe gets on people's nerves with the sunflower shower.
Maybe.
But I know Randall Grichuk was kidding about it in an interview last week and stuff like that. He seems to have dialed that back a little bit, and he seems to be legitimately a pretty positive character.
I just see that he's the guy that maybe isn't on that list that I feel like maybe has a shot at being on that list.
I agree with you. Maybe. I think he has a lot of value, and he could be. But he's also the kind that, depending on the ups and downs, might actually bring something in trade that other teams might appreciate him more than the Jays do.
Absolutely.
And despite what the Jays brain trust feels, Fisher's not on that list, and I don't think he should be on that list, despite their apparent belief in him.
I haven't
seen much from him so far.
I think Fisher so far, I think the reason he's in the lineup is almost a face-saving move for them just to say,
But they must have believed in him to get him and pay what they paid.
Yeah, I don't think they were seeing that they're giving much up in Sanchez.
Maybe.
And after that no-hitter that he really hasn't done, I think he's actually hurt now.
Yeah.
And Biagini has been a solid reliever for them. They put him down in the minors and brought him back up to get him rest, which we talked about last week. But I saw that as Biagini for Fisher.
Right.
And Sanchez just kind of went along with it.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I don't see Fisher being around at all.
And I notice Dalton Pompey hasn't really captured anyone's imagination.
No, I think when it comes to Dalton Pompey, he's in the wrong organization. To try and do this with 30 million people watching you, cheering for you to be a Toronto boy coming in, I just don't think it's the right situation. He needs to be down in Miami or Tampa or someplace like that and let him come along, and he might have a respectable career But I just don't think, plus the injuries are just
bad timing with injuries.
Terrible, terrible.
So I'm assuming Jamie as well had some pitchers that he feels will be in the system? Yeah,
I think next we have the bench players. That was what they were paying him, $1.5 million, and that guy was pitching so well for them.
He's lights out, actually.
And he went off to Colorado,
That's right.
So he's they did get something for him that may be of value long-term. Yeah.
Sung Won Oh has been injured, I believe, for most of the season, but he was very quality middle relief.
For sure.
Now that brings us to, I think next was the depth.
Okay, so he does have Teoscar on his bench, okay.
And Richard Urania, who pitched an inning for the Jays last week, fresh coming up from AAA as a shortstop.
They're like, you gotta have a good arm, though, I guess, to be a shortstop. So what the heck?
Yep. Yeah, speaks a little bit to, we were saying, so a little bit of disorganization in that, where you fly one of your relievers out to the West Coast and then decide to option them to the minors for another arm, and then the other arm doesn't get there in time.
Yeah, a little bit.
No big surprises there.
I could see these guys. I don't know about Urania, but the other two for sure. I do think Jansen's going to be a backup for sure.
Yeah.
Hernandez, I could see it. I could totally see it. He's got a positive attitude for sure. Yep. Like a positive guy, which I like to see. I talked about this a little bit last week about how, you know, 4 years ago, there were a lot of the alpha males walking around that were with the chests out, and it was kind of a... It didn't look like a real fun,
not necessarily atmosphere. Leadership. Right?
Yeah.
Consuming a lot of air.
Now you see that they're having fun and they're enjoying it, and they're getting better and they're learning how to win all together. And I they're a lot of fun to watch right now.
They sure are.
They are.
Well, I think the big difference there is we see with these guys, they seem to be pumping each other up instead of diminishing. Because you gave some examples there. Where maybe some of those guys with their chests puffed up, they weren't necessarily making people around them better. Exactly. They're stealing a little bit of the air in the room from others.
Yep.
All right, so I think next up we're talking about the pitchers.
Yep.
Let's see what rotation he has there. No big surprise in Nate Pearson. He sees TJ Zook, who just pitched a no-hitter last week, we talked about, for the Bisons.
So Nate Pearson is the second-ranked prospect in the Jays organization behind Bo Bichette, who obviously has turned himself into a full-time player. But he was their number one ranked prospect.
And he's dealing right now down in Buffalo.
Yeah. Alex Manoa, that's on that list there that you're going to mention in a minute, he's the number fourth ranked prospect.
And Anthony Kay is the guy that came over in the Stroman trade.
Right.
One of them. And he is also in Buffalo, and I believe he's dealing as well right now.
He's doing great.
He's doing really well. Yeah. And
he was one of the Mets' top prospects.
Yes, yes. And as a sidebar to that, Anthony Kay has really endeared himself to Canadians on Twitter.
Oh, it's so funny. Yeah.
You know, give me some info on Canada. And people are sending him bags of all dressed chips and ketchup. He said, ketchup chips, 4 out of 10, all dressed, 10 out of 10. Send me more. You know, and he's loving it. And he's really getting involved with it. And it's really cool to see. Really cool to see as a fan. So
now I'm just playing the laws of averages. Like, in their system, these obviously are the top prospects, and I hope by 2024 they are all in great shape. But we know that reality sets in, and there's injuries, there's trades. It's not often you see a lineup that's entirely homegrown.
I still have a dream when it comes to the starting rotation with a son of another former major leaguer, Cal Quantrill.
I knew Quantrill Davis was going to come up.
He pitched earlier in April for San Diego. I think it was in April or May. On the Friday night at Rogers Center, and he killed. And it was quite the atmosphere. I would love to see that kid back in a Blue Jay uniform, Port Hope, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be great to see him. So.
Yeah, there you see some of the, if you're watching at home, you're seeing some of the interactions of Anthony Kay.
Yep.
Yeah. He got a bunch of Timbits, and of course, I'm sure he probably liked them. They are delicious. They taste exactly like Munchkins from Dunkin' Donuts. Yeah, Anthony Kay, he's funny, and also he's been really good so far for AAA.
Yeah,
looks like a legitimate prospect to play for the Jays next year.
Absolutely,
I would say.
And I think, a lot has been made about at the trade deadline. They talked about going from 14 years of control to 42 years control, and a lot of people just panned that. There is something behind that, and I think there's some strong prospects there that you can build not just a starting rotation, but bullpen out of that. And we got to remember, too, the way it is now, we're not having five starters go every day, you know, or 5 days a week. We've got relievers coming in and doing a start here and there, mm-hmm. and bullpen days and stuff like that.
And so, starters. And
yeah, yeah, it's a lot different now. So, you know, I think things are looking up.
Just to make it entertaining, I'm going to say, I don't know, let's take Alek Manoah out of that, and I'm going to say they're going to get Stroman back. And free agency.
Can't see that happening.
He said he loved Toronto. Let's see if that actually happens.
Well, could maybe Roy Halladay's son pitch his way in there eventually?
Oh, you never know. You never know. They did
talk about the road, family connections.
Yep.
He's pitched for the Canadian national team in the past year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
He's obviously going to U.S. college. The Jays did draft him, of course, with the former number of his dad.
That's right.
And without the expectation of signing him, but undoubtedly he'd love to play for the Jays. Maybe that's an interesting thing 5 years from now.
He's at Penn State now, I think.
Right.
So that would be great to see Braden Holiday in a Jays uniform.
And you know what? I think there's some interesting lottery tickets on the Jays right now. And I mean, when he first came up, I remember having a conversation with you, Rob, about Jacob Wagisback. I mean, there was just something about the guy, a presence, you know, and he's pitched so much better than he did in the minor leagues. So far, and the sample size is getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And where is he sitting right now? He's still at a 3.63 earned run average, 4-1 in 10 starts now. You know, we were talking maybe he had three or four starts that looked pretty good. I thought there was maybe a something there. And suddenly, you know, Wagisback has played his way into being a starter for the Jays next year without question.
Absolutely. Based on what we've seen this year, he has made the best case for next year to be in the starting lineup.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly. Absolutely.
Yeah, even if he slides in as a number five, I definitely, I could see it.
Well, to be honest, based on what they have right now,
he could start opening day.
He's their number one.
Like, yeah, yeah.
You know, their ace this year is probably going to have how many wins? Seven?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, maybe?
Wagisback has four right now.
He has four.
Four and one.
Maybe he gets to seven. That makes him their ace if he does.
Yep.
Yeah,
undoubtedly, guys. I think the Jays will delve into free agency and the trade market for some pitchers. They have no choice; they have to. We see the potential of this baseball team, especially on the position player side, of having so much ability that I just feel that the front office owes it to this young group to go out and get a few starters and some relievers to help this group, because I think they can be so much better than they are.
Yeah, I think you will see that. There is traditionally that issue with coming north of the border. They're going to have to overpay. They did it back in the early 2000s with guys like B.J. Ryan, you know, to bring them up here. Right. They had to overpay. A.J. Burnett was another one around that same time. You probably will see that. The big problem is the big boys down south that are still going to be picking the, you know,
the Houston Astros and the Yankees and the Dodgers.
But
maybe the Jays take a shot at, you know, just to use a name from last night, Clay Buchholz. Interesting guy, a decent track record with the Boston Red Sox, of course. You know, a guy, you know, he's been injury prone this year, obviously, but, you know, he looked real good last night as we filmed this. And you know, maybe they take some wild card shots at guys like that that have been good players in the past, maybe that they've had a couple. You know, there's a role maybe for a couple of those guys on this team. Yeah. Maybe one of them comes through for them to be something.
Matt Shoemaker was looking like that guy.
Yeah.
At the start of the year until that ACL.
That's a shame, right? I mean, 1.57 earn run average and three wins.
Yeah.
So we should maybe bring it around to, I guess we have the bullpen to look at too.
Yeah, let's take a look at
let's see what the bullpen has to. Oh, Wagisback showed up in the bullpen. That's an interesting move on Jamie Bennett's part there.
So Thomas Pannone, Jordan Romero, Trent Thornton, Jacob Wagisback, Simeon Woods-Richardson, Kendall Williams, Adam Klofenstein, Yency Diaz, and Hector Perez. Now, at the bottom end of that list are a lot of the top prospects in the Jays farm system today, and that only makes sense. And Simeon Woods Richardson, of course, was the 18-year-old that came over in the Marcus Stroman trade as well as
with Anthony Kay.
Yeah. So, you know, he's shown some real good ability as well. And really, you know, when you look at that trade now, it looks a lot better for the Jays than maybe, you know, not knowing those players. I think people were a little bit negative about that trade, but I think they feel a lot better about it, seeing what they've done so far for the Jays farm team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mind you, the Mets have actually been a much improved team too since
they have.
Picking
it's maybe one of those things that works good for everybody.
A win-win. It's actually amazing how they were going to trade Syndergaard. He was out the door, and for some reason it didn't happen. And now they're on this roll and chasing a wild card.
Right. So, great work by Jamie Bennett putting together his projections. He doesn't see too much trade action happening. But this brings round two then. He doesn't actually have a manager on there. So my question is, in a moment, we're going to give our grades for Charlie Montoyo. But, you know, he's dealing with a young team, a young roster. He seems to be bridging the gap okay right now. Do you see Charlie Montoyo being there in 5 years?
I don't personally think so. But anything's possible. I mean, this brain trust believes in him, clearly. I think he's done a good job managing the young talent on this baseball team. He hasn't had a lot of pitching support in general that is difficult to maneuver at the best of times when you're having to use three relievers as your starting pitchers, essentially, in replacement of them. I think he's done a good job. I mean, if you're looking for a letter grade, I think he's done a B-plus job with what he's had to work with. I think the thing that strikes me is with Charlie is, the young players have progressed. They've looked good. They seem happy. And I think that is reflective of the manager himself on how he's been dealing with them. And I think he's brought them along nicely. And I think you have to give him a good grade for that. But 5 years down the line, hard to say. I would say no, but you never know.
I was a huge John Gibbons fan. I thought he was a great manager. I really liked him. Seemed like the type of guy you go have a beer with.
Yep.
So it took me a little while to win me over. But I really like this guy. He's won at every level except for the majors. And he's done a phenomenal job in the area of development with players. And when you look at what has come out of that Tampa organization over the last 15 years or so, it's pretty impressive, and his fingerprints are on that. I mean, it's not entirely Charlie Montoyo, but he's
definitely part of that.
He's definitely a part of that.
Is there an organization that's developed more quality players in the last 15 years?
I'm not sure there is.
Devil Rays? No, I don't think
sure there is. And is there an organization that has figured out how to win the way they have with pretty well no payroll? Like their budget is just nil. And so I'm going to give him definitely a B-plus, the same. And I'm going to say that he will be around in 5 years because I think they're going to give him a shot here. And I see these guys, I see it as a different atmosphere. John Gibbons, when I talk about those alpha males that were around a few years ago, like the Donaldsons and the Batistas and the Encarnacions, he could manage those guys. He was on the 86 Mets. So John Gibbons has likely been in a police chase at one point.
Probably.
You know, and if you want to hear his story.
We're picking up a teammate from jail.
Yeah. He's bailed people out if he hasn't been in there with them.
Yeah.
And if you ever want to hear a good story, listen to him when Mookie Wilson hits the ball through Buckner's legs. He was in the bullpen. And the police horses started going nuts. It's actually really funny to listen and tell the story if you can find it on the internet. But so Gibbons was good at managing those guys. I think these young players, it's a different generation now. They're different mindset. And I think Charlie Montoyo is that guy that can deal with them and bring them along.
I would say he sticks around for 5 years. We know the hitters are going to hit. They have the dynamite. It's whether or not they actually do get the arms pitching for them. Because right now, that's their biggest deficit. I'm not going to give him a B+. The expectations for the team have been so low. That makes things a little bit easier for him. My big question mark so far right now is if you look at some of the other areas, like on the base paths, they started the year with some grievous base path errors. And ultimately the manager, you know, he's ultimately in charge of some of that stuff. You know, they haven't been willing to use the hit and run or the stolen base. And I think that's a tool that a young team should have. We saw against Cleveland a few years ago, if they had a bit of speed, it might have made a difference in the playoffs. You have to be able to win different ways. So base paths and the pitching's been suspect. And the batting, if you look at how it's evolved this season, the plate discipline was terrible for a long time.
Yeah.
And maybe terrible for a bit longer than it should have been. Once they got that more selective, then they got running. But it took a little longer to get there than I would have liked.
I've got a stat for you just to take off on your point about that is, the Toronto Blue Jays have the lowest batting average in the league. In both leagues, they're 30th of 30 teams. 236 is their batting average as a team. And, you know, the Boston Red Sox lead at 276. So there's a long way, 40 points between top to bottom. And that's, you know, as you say, about plate discipline. It's about learning with some of the young players as well.
Some people are saying Biggio has slowed down, but he actually is getting on base more.
His on-base percentage is still good. Yeah.
More selective with his pitches.
His average, walking. His average,
he's taking walks.
His on-base is there, yeah.
When you talk about the on-base, the base running gaffes, and I see a lot of like trying to steal with two outs, just a lot of risky stuff that it was almost like he's leaving up the players to figure out. At times, and you're thinking, what are they thinking? Why are they doing this? Why are they taking this risk going second to third with two outs and, you know, just some...
And maybe that's inexperience, but that also, that's kind of up to the coaching team to get that in place.
And there's a couple of, I can think of a couple of instant replays that he probably should have used, and he didn't. And when you look back at it, you know, he would have won them.
He would have won them, Now, I will say this. They talk about a thing called situational leadership. And now that the season has progressed and the youngsters have got a bit of experience under their belts, you got to let them get that underneath them first, and then you start to shape it more. And I noticed last week, you know, he didn't get angry about it or whatever, but he very specifically called out two errors that he felt led to a loss. Right. And I was like, well, that's good to see, because we've seen the laid-back, you know, let-them-play guy. It's good to see he was saying, no, as professionals, we can't make those mistakes if we want to win. So that's kind of – I'm glad to see that situational leadership's coming in where – he's not embarrassing people, but he's putting it on the line saying this is what needs to happen here. So
sorry, did you what is your grade? I didn't catch it.
I think I'm gonna go B minus so far.
That's the school teacher.
C plus B minus. I'll go B
minus. He's a little tougher grader than we are.
The expectations have been so low with him, that made it a little tougher.
Yeah.
Now here's what I'd suggest we're gonna do. Let's bring it around and do our let's do our From the Clark Avs right now, and then we'll pick up with the Players' Weekend stuff. And I think the topic we had there, which team is poised to be most improved, we can carry that over till next week probably.
Sure.
And go from there.
Let's do that.
All right, so for our podcast listeners, you can catch the link on our Twitter feed, which is at BaseballTalkTV1. So we're going to 1999. And the reason I picked this one is it had some great Canadian MLB players mentioned in it. It had some all-time great Blue Jays and, you know, Doc Holliday and Tony Fernandez. And it also mentioned a character that we were talking about after the show last week, Tony Bautista, who played both for the Montreal Expos, which is where he first got on my radar, and then he played for the Blue Jays, played for Arizona, and I think Baltimore too.
Is where, who picked him up from the Blue Jays.
So first of all, the headline we're seeing here that you can catch on our Twitter feed is A's gained ground on the Blue Jays. And they were both wild card contenders back then in August of 1999. And so this is a game that the A's ended up squeaking out a 9-8 win over the Jays. New Brunswick boy Matt Stairs had two home runs for Oakland. And of course, he played for the Expos and the Blue Jays himself. And then Paul Spoljarek came in to pitch after Doc Holliday got the start when David Wells' back was acting up. No surprise there.
Right.
And, yeah, so just a lot of nice nostalgia. If you want to check out that article, it's from Lodi New Sentinel, page 11. And, again, I was kind of using it as a segue for Tony Bautista, who those of you that remember him probably remember he had an extremely unique batting stance. where he would start his at bat facing fully the pitcher.
Yeah.
And we have a screenshot here for our TV viewers. Again, our podcast listeners, you can go to our Twitter feed and check out the picture. But yeah, his chest would be full on facing the pitcher, which I guess would give him a great binocular view of the pitch. He would close his stance as the pitch got a little closer. But yeah, what do you guys remember of that one?
That is exactly how I remember him.
Yep.
The weird batting stance. Left leg or left foot pretty well out of the box. And then he would kind of go into a little bit of a weird crouch as he came around, and then he would hit. And he went on a tear when he first
He hit like, what, maybe 40 home runs for the
Yeah,
Jays,
and
think,
he was great. And it was so strange. They put him on waivers, and he got claimed. And they didn't pull him back, didn't try for a trade, nothing. And he was gone. It was so bizarre. And the Orioles picked him up. He played a couple of years with them, and then I believe went to Arizona, and then that was kind of his career after that.
You know what surprised me was he had so much success with it. I was surprised we didn't see some copycats.
Yeah.
For instance, Rod Carew had a not as extreme, but Rod Carew had that real flat bat stance.
Yep.
And, of course, Rod Carew, Hall of Famer, who often had really, really high average. But we saw a lot of other guys like Cecil Cooper, Garth Orge. Quite a few other batters took that extremely flat bat stance and had success with it, right? You don't get a lot of power from that, but if you want to hit for average, that's the way to go. But yeah, I was surprised that he has enough success with this. I thought there'd be more copycats.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I haven't seen anyone before or since do it.
No, not really.
Now we have a really fun clip here we're running. This is when he went and played in Japan. And you'll get an eyeful of the stance, but then there's just something humorous comes up on one of the pitches here. So we'll let it play out, then we'll describe it for the podcast listeners.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy that showed tremendous power with such an unusual stance. But you watch how he does square up pretty much by the time the pitch comes. So he gets hit by a pitch, runs to the mound, and then runs to first base. He faked out the pitcher. And of course, everybody's laughing about it, which is kind of funny. But.
Yeah, for the podcast, you can catch again. We'll put the clip on our Twitter feed. But he got plunked by a pitch, and so he took a few steps. He did a roundabout curve, made it look like he was sprinting to the mound, and the pitcher actually started heading for the outfield. He was like, okay, I want nothing to do with this. And, of course, he just took two or three steps and then ran to first base. And then the pitcher and everyone else had a really good laugh about it there. Yeah. So it's kind of a fun clip.
Yeah, it is fun.
All right, so Ken Batista. Yeah, I wonder where that guy is today.
I haven't heard much of him since.
Yeah, we'll have to hit Google after and find out. So that brings us around to this past weekend. It was called – oh, hang on there. Oh, geez, yeah. Adam's telling us there in the local senior baseball. Recent years, it was Kincardine Cubs were the top dog for 5 or 6 years. And the Listwell Legionnaires have
won their first ever title.
Yeah, knocked them off there. Here's an article by Ryan Drury, friend of our show here. And
Chris Kurtz, the team owner. He's been a guest, of course.
A guest on our show here, yeah. So they beat the Byron Storm 9-7 to win their first league title. So good on them. Congratulations, Listwell Legionnaires.
Yeah.
And now that brings us around to this past weekend was Players Weekend, which means a lot of gimmicky stuff. The home team wears all black, and not including numbers, but and then the visiting team wears all white, including their numbers. So I don't know if it's kind of had a Star Wars-y feel to me.
Yeah, I was reminded, actually, of Bob and Doug McKenzie's...
the hockey teams.
Where they wore... And they had Stormtrooper-type outfits on. And I actually think tweeted that out. But it just... I guess I was reading later that...
Sorry, before the jump off, you know what it reminded me of? The white uniforms looked like cricket outfits.
Yeah. You had texted me there the other night.
Yeah. Someone's going to have to hit a googly and go for a century. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's apparently, I was reading later that MLB marketing, their intention was for the players to color them up somehow
right.
with wristbands and right. whatever. And just nobody really bought into it.
Didn't, yeah.
Which is kind of sad when you think of it. And all they did really was complain about it. It was a little bit weird, a little bit different. I'm not into the nicknames on the back.
Yeah, it was a little weird, eh? I just found that...
They've done that for the last few years.
I'm a traditionalist. I didn't really care for the nicknames.
I know the Dodgers and Yankees were playing each other in Dodger Stadium, and they were very upset that they couldn't at least once wear their traditional uniform. They were on Sunday Night Baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, let them wear their traditional... There's a long-standing rivalry there. So it...
Like, the nicknames were a little fun, but a lot of them were pretty standard. Like, Justin Smokes was Mokey, and...
Yeah, I think probably the best one was Joey Votto, who had Who. Because he's a first baseman, so Who's on first?
Clever, yeah. That's
funny. And, I think that was my favorite one.
Okay, yeah.
His name's eluding me right now, but one that otherwise could be taken the wrong way was one of the Seattle players had The Babe. But it worked because he physically was...
Okay.
He was huge.
Yeah, and facially he looked like Babe Ruth. Yeah, if he didn't look so much like Babe Ruth, that would have been a really ostentatious nickname to put on there. But his name's eluding me right now.
You know
what?
Give Major League Baseball some credit for having a little bit of creativity. It maybe didn't completely work.
Exactly.
But I like the fact that they wanted to try something different.
Yeah.
If you notice the away teams that were wearing all white, that's with the exception of the pitcher. And they're saying they felt it was a safety thing that some players brought up, that with the white uniforms and the white caps, the release point of the ball was a little confused.
Yeah.
So they had the pitchers wear black caps on their away teams.
It was almost like a batter's eye. They were losing the ball and the caps.
And which reminds me of when, remember Dan Quisenberry had the down below
side
release?
Armor.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they actually brought in a new rule. If you ever noticed, the rosin bags have to be on the back of the mound now. Because apparently when he was releasing it from so low, some batters were complaining that with the rosin bag, and he was releasing it near there, he was so near the ground that they're saying it was confusing, so they had to start putting rosin bags on the back of the mound.
Oh,
yeah,
wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
See, it was an interesting weekend. It's too bad that they didn't get into it a bit more. But, the baseball's having some troubles with attendance and fans getting into it. They've got to start doing some more stuff.
A little gimmicky, but...
Yeah, they've got to... I think more people really need to... Or more leagues need to look at what the NBA does for their marketing. Because for some reason, that league, it just seems to be head and shoulders above.
Here's one of their tough things is, I think part of it is that the players are a little less identifiable when you're making $30 million. Then again, I guess the NBA seems to get away with it, but... Baseball used to have that small town grassroots feel.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at someone who's making $30 million, it's a little harder to do that sometimes.
They're not that relatable anymore at that point. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that brings us around to, we got about 50 seconds left here. We were going to talk a little bit about the Canadian invasion into Seattle.
It's like a home game every time.
Yeah. Apparently started when Brock Lowry was with the Jays a few years ago, about 6 years ago.
BC boy. Yeah.
And Ken Jennings got into a Twitter battle with some fans regarding it.
Yep.
Some good signs being put up there. But basically what we're talking about here is in Seattle, they often get a majority of Canadian fans wearing Blue Jays gear. Apparently they sell. They've kind of figured it out, and they sell a lot of Blue Jays gear.
Why wouldn't
during
they?
Those games, So I think it's a win-win for them, really.
Yeah, I think Seattle maybe needs to embrace it a bit more.
Yeah.
Maybe Canadians, we sometimes get the flag wave and stuff going a little too much. Sometimes I've heard complaints from Americans about that, but for the most part, a fun weekend for everybody.
For sure.
All right, and this has been a fun show for us. Hope you have a fun weekend, and we'll see you next week on Baseball Talk.